Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to episode 11 of Conservative Reality Check. I'm Amy Riccardi, and I'm super excited to be here today. So we have quite a show today, and I want to just tell you a little bit about what's going on. So it's December 3rd. It is Thursday, and there has been an awful lot that's going on. This show is actually going to be primarily focused on a tweet that Lynn Wood had put out last week at some point in time saying, hey, Americans, you guys need to be paying attention to the steps of a color revolution. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about this today and explain to you what I know about it so far. I've had a chance to go through and do quite a bit of research on this. So I'm going to talk to you about what a color revolution is, what the tools are of it, and what the current steps are, and how you're going to find this eerily similar to what's happening right now in the US. But before I get to that, I want to spend a little bit of time just telling you and giving you some quick thoughts about some things going on. So I had a chance, kind of while I'm working here throughout the day, I have two monitors here in front of me, and at the top of one of them, I kind of keep the news and things running up there so I can kind of pay attention when I've got some bandwidth to do that. And so I've been able to listen to pretty much the entirety of the testimony and hearings in Pennsylvania, Phoenix, and so it was Gettysburg, Phoenix, and Detroit that happened just day before yesterday. And then today Georgia is going on. So I've got that up here too, although I'm not listening to it right now while I'm recording, but I get the gist of kind of what's going on now. So I want to just spend a little bit of time telling you what I'm seeing in all three of these major cities. And if you were to take the themes out of all three of these cities, you're seeing the exact same thing playing out. And there's, you know, many of us have friends who are like, well, just show me the proof. Why has Trump lost all these lawsuits and all of these court cases and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to explain to you very simply why. These court cases are going before very liberal judges that have no interest in doing what's right. Clearly, they have no interest in upholding the Constitution. They have no interest in hearing even the evidence being presented in these hearings right now. So, you know, people are saying, oh, well, he hasn't won these lawsuits. That's because he hasn't been able to present the evidence to these judges because they just don't want to hear it. It's like the epitome of the deep state in the legal system right now. It's insanity. And the only way to get this up to the Supreme Court, which is going to wind up being, I hope and I pray, the saving grace of our democracy, is to lose in these states in order to be able to continue to contest these up in, you know, up to the higher levels of court until you get up to the Supreme Court. So just because he's losing does not mean he's really losing. It just means it's just opened up the gate and the door to the next level in the legal process. So don't give up hope when you hear that, number one. Number two, a lot. In fact, the majority of these court cases are being brought by independent people outside of the Trump legal team, right? These are independent patriots who saw things that were very, very shady happening in the election process. And so that's a piece of it. And so what I want to just say is there's reams and volumes and hundreds of people that have testified or provided affidavits in the Pennsylvania, the Arizona, the Michigan, and now the Georgia hearings that haven't been heard yet by mainstream media. They're not getting covered by mainstream media. Mainstream media is literally intentionally blocking anybody from being able to get this out into mainstream media. So your friends who are not paying attention to anything other than mainstream social media are never going to wind up hearing about this stuff. They're just not going to. And I have been posting up a bunch that willful ignorance does not mean that there's no evidence of what's going on right now. Okay. Willful ignorance does not mean that there's no really, really valid and legitimate evidence as to a voter and election fraud. So let me just take a minute or two, and then I want to jump into this color revolution stuff, but let me just take a minute or two just to summarize for you what's been going on in all of these hearings so far. Number one, two different pieces of this, right? We've got voter fraud and we've got election fraud. Okay, so we'll start with the voter fraud piece first. The voter fraud piece, we're seeing widespread ballot harvesting and tainting of and use of homeless people, dead people, people that are in assisted living facilities and nursing homes, ballots being put out and put forth on their requests on their behalf, people voting on their behalf that are not the actual people that should be voting, okay? There was actually even in California today, I just saw this morning, a new one that just came out with a lawsuit from the California District Attorney's Office in Los Angeles, where there are 41 counts of voter and election fraud. All right, so that just came out in California. I just saw that today. The lawsuit actually was filed on November 12th. And so that's starting to, California starting to crack open too, which will be interesting. Virginia, by the way, is getting ready to crack open, but I'm not going to talk about that today. And I know that kind of firsthand. So I'm pretty excited about that. But we're starting to see, we are hearing stories from all these other places through this testimony. During the election, Republican vote watchers and poll watchers not being able to do their jobs and being harassed and clapped and cheered when they get kicked out of these facilities, counting facilities. We've seen all kinds of weird things happening with the people working in the polling spots, adding information to someone's ballot, a name or an address or a date of birth, for example. We've seen and heard plenty of stories of ballots being counted more than once. A vote being put forth that looks like somebody voted for both Republican and Democrat presidential candidate, and the poll watcher person giving it to the Democrats every time instead of spoiling the ballot. I mean, there's all these different kinds of things happening, and you're hearing these stories over and over and over and over again, which would very clearly indicate to me that there has been a pattern of a coordinated attempt to use the same kinds of cheating and illegal activity in multiple Democrat stronghold cities. I mean, I'm not trying to be like super left or super right on this. I'm just telling you, just as a neutral third party, you listen to these things and you're hearing the exact same stories from different local people that have worked in these different polling locations. And you're hearing the exact same kinds of stories over and over again. Okay. Then let's talk about election fraud. We've got the gentleman from the USPS contract truck driver driving ballots from New York to Pennsylvania, two places in Pennsylvania, and then his truck getting mysteriously just gone, right? We've heard, and by the way, in every single one of these, we've heard incredible amounts of data analysis by very, very credible sources about how the data has been manipulated and is being, and how it's very clear there've been clear Democrat data dumps done at certain, ballot dumps done at certain points in the counting process, that there's been manipulation of the vote percentages. And what I found really entertaining, frankly, is that when you look and do the data analysts, you know, your vote and my vote count as one each. It doesn't have a decimal point after it, but actually when you look at the raw data dumps, you'll notice that many of these vote counts have point something afterwards, meaning that the percentages of votes calculated is getting manipulated at certain points in time so that your vote, for example, could be worth 0.53 and the opposition candidate would be 0.47. Instead of it being like a 50-50, your vote, my vote, each counts equally. They're actually tinkering with the software behind the scenes and the formulas behind the scenes. And subsequently, most of these elections in most of these states do not have an even number vote tally. It goes out to a decimal point, which tells you right then and there that somebody's been tinkering with the protocols of the elections and the election summaries. So you're hearing these stories, these common themes happening across all of these different testimonies, and they're picking and using people at these hearings that are local poll workers. They're not moving the same group of people from one state to the next. They're picking people that worked at these polling centers from those local places. So that's crazy. The other thing you're wind up hearing too, a ton of, that the Democrats had tons of poll watchers. They brought in people from other states. The people up in Michigan and Detroit were actually saying there were people from California that were flown in to work at their polling center. And they were extremely intent on riling up the Republican poll watchers to get them kicked out. So, and again, you heard this in all three of the testimonies. And again, I'm not listening right now, but I've been listening off and on to the Georgia one today. It's a little bit different approach that they're taking today, but nonetheless, it's fascinating. All right. So that's been a few minutes on what I've seen so far. I think that's really important. I want to dive into this color revolution piece. So this the rest of this podcast is going to be just focused on that right now. Glenn Beck has done a phenomenal job of putting together a couple of different video sessions, like education sessions, literally on color revolutions. I don't know what compelled me to watch them back in September, but I did. And I found them really interesting and also relatable to what's going on now. But now that we're several more months into this election process and this election cycle, I've gone back and watched these videos again, and I'm even more convinced that's exactly what's happening right now in the United States. And it's really freaking me out right now on some levels, but at the same time, I think there's good at the end. So I'm gonna go there at the very end. I'm also in the show notes down below as normal. I'm gonna put the links to both of these shows you can go watch on YouTube. I pulled the YouTube versions off. I have actually subscribed to Glenn Beck's, to Blaze TV. And so I can watch Glenn Beck's show, this show on this in continuity, I guess, just to watch the whole show in and of itself, which I think was really, really helpful and put it in context. But I've got both of the YouTube videos up here so you can watch the free versions of them. It's broken into two parts. So I'm going to do what Glenn did, but I'm going to condense this down a little bit into one video with two pieces to this, right? So the first part here is really kind of what I'm going to call 9 tools to a color revolution. So what is a color revolution, right? This is a playbook that our State Department and other three-letter agencies have used overseas to help overthrow governments. We saw this in Ukraine. We saw the attempt of this in Egypt during the Arab Spring. We've seen this in the country of Georgia in Eastern Europe. We thought we were starting to see this a little bit in Russia in 2013. But I want to just share with you what the tools are first, because you have to have the tools in place in a country in order to let the playbook happen. Okay, so here's what I mean. There's seven pillars to a color revolution, or 7 pieces of the puzzle that you have to have in play in order to help that process move. So there's the process, but even before you have the process in play, you need the tools, a predominant number of those tools in play. So let me run through what the 9 tools are really quickly. Number 1 is media. You've got to have media. In this case, the news organizations and Hollywood and other people kind of in your control, right? You've got to have them in your pocket. The Democratic socialists have Hollywood and the media organizations now firmly in their control. They control the narrative. We've seen this especially prevalent since the election in the last couple of weeks. It's crazy. We've all seen it. We all know what's going on. Even Fox News has changed, right? So media is number one, well controlled by the Democratic Socialists right now. Number two, schools. And if you have kids that have gone to school or gone to college in the last 15 years or are currently in college now, you know full well how entrenched the Marxist and socialist and communist mindset is in colleges and universities. You can even see this now trickling down into high school, middle school, elementary school, with critical race theory and all these other things being taught. So we have now gotten schools well indoctrinated into this color revolution tool bag. All right, so media and schools. The third one is government. And we all know this one is in the bag for sure too. This is the deep state. These are the actors who are not working for our government, but are actually working against our government and against our constitution, and are actively working to, indirectly or directly overthrow our government, literally want a change in regime and change in structure. And so our deep state is a perfect example of how our government is now in the bag for this revolution. The fourth one is interesting. It's the military. Now, I actually think, in my opinion, Obama did quite a number on our military when he was in power. I think he got rid of a lot of patriotic military leaders who just didn't want to put up with this crap anymore, and they retired. He also reorganized things quite a bit as far as the vacancies in his leaders and put people that were very sympathetic to his causes into leadership roles. I don't believe, by any stretch of the imagination, that our military has turned on our government. I absolutely don't believe that. But I do think that he has put in cracks in that foundation, which some people are really having to go and spend some time really patching up. So I think that the military is not in the tool bag yet, but certainly was being worked on by the Obama administration for sure. The fifth one is money. This would be our economy. This would be the fact that a lot of people are out of work right now because of COVID. Our economy and money flow in particular, and the Federal Reserve, like there's issues with with money right now. There's a big push right now. You even saw during the COVID stuff over the summer, this move to where people aren't taking cash money anymore. It's only kind of credit or electronic money, which I find very, very bizarre. But money is part of it. And I would suggest that that is now becoming quickly in the bag for the socialists and the Marxists and the Democrats. Okay. The sixth one, 100% social media. Sixth one in the bag, Google, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, censorship, 100% in the bag for Marxists, Democrats, socialists. All right, 100%. We've seen, especially since the election, massive amounts of censorship. If you don't even believe that there's censorship going on right now, you, again, head buried in the sand, you're not paying attention, because definitely it is. You're seeing the uptick of Parler, MeWe, Rumble, and some others coming because they're basically able now to work around the censorship issues that are happening. Number seven are the police. Again, like the military, I don't believe the police in general are sucked into the democratic socialist mindset. And I would say that is particularly true because a huge number of police organizations, which have remained relatively apolitical, did wind up backing Trump this time around. So I don't believe the police are in this. Like I said, I don't believe the military are either, but I do believe there were cracks kind of embedded in the foundation of that. Not going anywhere, but I do think that, you know, the police, especially with all of this, defund the police crap that's happened over the last several months, I think that's really rattled some things too. I think the police and the military in particular are going to be really, their faith in our constitution is going to be tested over the next several months. I think it's going to become a thing. Number eight, is being able to do things from the grassroots and bottom up, and being able to do protests and insurrection from the bottom up. So Black Lives Matter, Antifa, the rioting, the looting, all of that stuff. I think everything that's happened up to this point has been a testing ground for how quickly these organizations can self-coordinate and spring up and create problems for our country. So they 100% have those processes in the bag. And in fact, right around the election time, I started seeing websites popping up that were from these kind of grassroots, bottom-up groups of people. Funded by all kinds of shady characters that were popping up, basically recruiting people to come to DC and riot and be on standby and ready to do that. So those groups exist, those websites exist, those structures, communication structures exist in order for those things to happen. And number nine, and a big one, is being able to get compliance from the population. And if COVID hasn't been the perfect example of how to get people to comply when their first and second and even Third Amendment rights are being violated, it's just the perfect example of, you know, we have all become sheep and have all complied, because things will be, we won't have access to the things that we want, grocery stores, shopping stores, going to events, socializing with people, public shaming if you don't wear a mask, et cetera. We have got our entire population extremely compliant. You might say you're combative, but at the end of the day, you know, it's in a lot of places really hard to get into a grocery store if you don't have a mask on, right? So that's kind of a key thing. So we've got everybody really compliant. So of these nine tools, media, schools, government, military, money, social media, police, the bottom-up grassroots, and compliance, they have for sure seven of the nine things covered, with the military and the police being pretty much the only exception to that. So those are the tools of the color revolution, but the process and the pieces of this play out like that, or like this. So number one, the seven pillars. Number one is you have to have a semi-autocratic rather than a fully autocratic leader. So you know the language about Trump. What do they call him? Who do they characterize him like? They characterize him like Hitler. Lots and lots and lots of examples of he's a fascist, he's Hitler, or he's like Putin and the whole Russia business, right? So he's not fully autocratic, but for sure, he's being painted into the picture of being semi-autocratic. And Glenn Beck makes this really great point. He's like, you know, COVID kind of broke that argument for them, because Trump isn't doing required and mandatory mask mandates. He won't do it because he knows that's the job of the states to sort out for themselves and localities, right? But who is talking about mandatory mask mandates? Biden and the Biden administration. So they're right there at the doorstep of number one, which is, you know, right now painting Trump as a semi-autocratic rather than a fully autocratic leader. Number two is an unpopular incumbent and having a popular candidate to come in. This one also real interesting, because they have certainly painted Trump as the unpopular incumbent in a thousand different ways. The problem on this teeters on the opposite side, because Biden hasn't necessarily been the popular candidate either. We all know this election was stolen. We all know that Trump won. So this one gets to be even more challenging, but the storyline that the left has created is that Trump is evil, is a narrative that is clear. And that's the second part of the second pillar of this, is having a character that you can really not like. And so they've worked hard on that. Number three, the third pillar, is a united and organized opposition to debate the election results. And oh boy, do we have that. We have the people that were just want to do the willful ignorance piece of this. We've got the media that's definitely helping in painting that picture, and that'll come up. That's another pillar coming up here. But we definitely have a united and organized opposition to the debate election results for sure. Number four is an ability to drive home the point that voting results were falsified or voting results are wrong. And while the right is working very hard to create the explain the narrative that the election results were wrong, the left is working even harder to block us from all of that. So we've definitely gotten a pillar number four in play too. Number five, an independent media to inform citizen of the falsified votes. In this case, you know, frankly, it's just simply to not cover the vote or election issues that are out there. So we've got an independent media, and I'll put it big air quotes around independent because I think they're all very much dependent and dependent on George Soros and others. But we have a media, an independent media to inform citizens of falsified votes that are basically not doing their job. Right? The media is definitely in the bag for the revolutionaries or the left or the socialist Democrats. Number six is political opposition that's capable of mobilizing tens of thousands of people to protest election fraud. Now, I still feel very strongly that Trump is going to be able to pull this election out. And I think what's going to wind up happening when he does is that the whole Antifa BLM organizations, plus all these other fringe organizations that are now out there, have been using this whole summer as a testing ground for how quickly they can mobilize themselves. So for sure, number six is a huge bolded check mark for that, because certainly the political opposition has great capability of mobilizing tens of thousands of people to protest again. And they for sure will be doing that in December and into January. And number seven is division amongst the regime's coercive forces, meaning the police and military. And I do not believe right now that that's the case. But what I do see and what I do worry about is as Americans start pushing back on these COVID restrictions, we're seeing this happening in New York in some bars and restaurants in New York City now, where they remain open. And you have the police now getting put in the middle of, do I enforce this or do I not enforce this? To what degree do I need to be here but not really enforce anything? I don't really want to arrest anybody, but how do I do my job and not get fired, kind of a thing. So I think that you've got all of these things in play right now that are really, really important. And all seven of these color revolution pillars are in play in some ways. I think pillar number seven, which is the police and military, again, I think that one's a little bit not necessarily solidified yet, but certainly, again, we're putting our police and our military in a really uncomfortable positions. And at the end of the day, if, you know, the president makes a ruling or a decision on things that he has the capability of making ruling or decisions on, and it goes against what local police or military are telling their own people, we're going to start seeing that piece of it getting really contentious too. And I'm worried about that. So again, this is a roadmap that our government, I believe, created and has helped use in Georgia, Ukraine, and others. Georgia, Ukraine, and we wanted to try this in Russia, but it didn't work because we had a fully autocratic leader in Putin. So that didn't work out so well. But we have used this model in other countries, and we're using it right now in this one in a slightly different variation, but definitely the same pillars and definitely the nine tools are all in play here in this country right now. And I think this is why Lynn Wood had strongly suggested that everybody study this and understand what a color revolution is, because this playbook is playing out here in the United States in some very subversive ways. And we're starting to wake up to it, but we haven't fully woken up to it yet. And we've got to start thinking about this. So I'm going to ask you guys, please go look up Color Revolution, understand where it comes from, understand the concepts of it. Definitely check out the two links I'm going to put below for Glenn Beck's part one and part two. It's part one is the seven pillars of a color revolution, and part two is how the Obama administration and others are putting the color revolution playbook into play here in the United States. So make sure you check those out. so much going on. The president's 46-minute speech that he gave last night, or went public last night on Facebook, is definitely worth watching. I think he is laying the foundation right now that, excuse me, but shit's about to get really real right now in this country. And if we don't hammer down on this stuff really soon, we're going to be in trouble. So color revolution, study, it's your homework. Read about it. Watch Glenn's programs. They're fantastic. Have a great afternoon, you guys. More soon. I will try to start cranking these out a little bit more frequently. There's just so much to cover. And I've really been having to kind of spend some time in my own brain, really kind of filtering out what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing to kind of keep things more simple and compact. But I hope you guys have a good one. As always, please make sure to share these videos. They're on Rumble. The Rumble channel is Conservative Reality Check. You can find us in MeWe, Rumble, and Parler. And you can find me on Parler as well at Amy Riccardi. I hope you guys have a great one. I'll talk to you soon.